From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In the face of the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S.'s extreme wealth inequality, lack of nationalized healthcare system, lack of a federal paid sick leave law, and other related issues have shown the nation's severe vulnerability. In a New York Times article, Farhad Manju wrote, "Everyone's a socialist in a pandemic, but the laugh catches in your throat because the only joke here is the sick one American society plays on workers every day." In this dangerous new world, we just happen to be in the middle of a critical primary election where one of the two frontrunners is a self-described democratic socialist who's been touting Medicare for All as the central plank of his domestic policy. Is Bernie Sanders the president we need in a pandemic like this? Joining me to help answer that question is Richard Wolff, visiting professor at the New School University in New York, professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst. He's written a number of books, including Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism, Imagine Living in a Socialist USA, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, and Understanding Marxism. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Thank you, Sonali. I'm glad to be here.
I thought this article by Farhad Manju was really quite critical because all of a sudden, all of these vulnerabilities in the U.S. economy became so starkly visible, but also the reactions of political figures. He pointed out that Ted Cruz said Representative Ted Yoho, who's a Republican from Florida, said, "You can look at it as socialized medicine," you know, when they were asking for treatments and testing to be free. "But in the face of an outbreak, a pandemic, what are your options? Is this precisely the moment when proponents of Medicare for All need to be speaking up louder than ever?"
Absolutely. Here we have literally on display the failure not just of our privatized healthcare system, you know, companies that could have and should have been making all kinds of kits, all kinds of equipment, all kinds of extra services available to handle this kind of an issue. Let's remember, viruses are part of life. We've always had viruses. A few years ago, we had SARS and MERS, which are quite similar to this virus. We know what the problem is, but our privatized healthcare system has a different priority. And that priority is to make profits for doctors, for hospitals, for drug and appliance makers, and above all for the insurance companies. And if you make private profit the priority, then the rest of us, in this case public health, is held hostage to whatever is profitable. That's why we don't have the equipment, the tests, the systems worked out, the services available. It's not profitable. Now, you might have had a government that did something about this. That's what's happened in other capitalist countries. But in this country, with the privatization fetish of the Republican Party and pretty much the center of the Democratic Party, plus the extremity of the Trump belief in the fundamentalism of private is always better, you don't have the public sector taking the responsibility to compensate for the failures of the private, with the end result that the United States, and this has been confirmed now by the World Health Organization and a host of others, is among the worst performers already in coping with a virus crisis, which is at its beginnings in this country. We haven't been able to learn from the way South Korea or Japan or above all China mobilized resources in a way that put public health first and everything else second. No private profit in between to block the appropriate response. So yes, I think Bernie Sanders advocating for a public healthcare system, even though I would go further than he does in doing that, he's certainly pointing in the right direction. And this crisis, this coronavirus crisis, could not be a more powerful demonstration of the rightness of his position when compared to the absence of virtually any such position among his competitors.
And in fact, later we'll get to what Biden's position is. But on Thursday, Sanders gave a speech, you know, just a day after he announced he was going to be staying in the race, was looking forward to the a debate with Biden on Sunday. He then gave a speech because, of course, 24 hours into this virus spread, things have gotten so much worse. And I want to play a short excerpt of what he said on Thursday about the need for the right kind of response on the coronavirus.
While we work to pass a Medicare for all single-payer system, the United States government today must make it clear that in the midst of this emergency, everyone in our country, regardless of income or where they live, must be able to get all of the health care they need without cost. Obviously, when a vaccine or other effective treatment is developed, it must be free of charge. We cannot live in a nation where if you have the money, you get the treatment you need to survive, but if you're working class or poor, you get to the end of the line. That would be morally unacceptable. Further, we need emergency funding right now for paid family and medical leave. Anyone who is sick should be able to stay home during this emergency and receive their paycheck.
And that is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders speaking on Thursday. This struck a sharp contrast with Trump, who a day earlier gave a speech from the Oval Office where the closest thing that he came to saying about healthcare was that the health insurance executives had assured him that co-pays for coronavirus treatment would be free. He then was corrected by industry officials who said only co-pays for coronavirus testing would be free, not treatment. Of course, Trump seemed to, in his world, those who don't have health insurance or very high co-pays may not even exist. Richard Wolff, how sharp a contrast does Bernie Sanders present with Trump?
As sharp as we could imagine. I mean, basically, because I don't have to hesitate in using these words, I won't. What Mr. Trump is saying and what the executives of the drug companies and the insurers are saying is, we put profit first. We're going to concern ourselves with saving the industry, saving the enterprises, making the money work, making the stock market come back. And if that means people can't get the test they want because they can't afford to go because their copay is only partially covered and not all, this is the same horrible story we are always told. And look, it's part of the market system, which we dare not discuss, but let me do it. A market is a system which declares that when something is scarce, the way you distribute a scarce item among people who are more numerous than there are items to distribute is by giving the scarce item to the ones with the most money. That's true of food, it's true of shelter, it's what we call a gentrification, when the housing is given to the rich and everybody else has to become either homeless or move to a distant suburb. Allowing the market to distribute whatever is scarce carries with it the same immorality that Bernie was courageous enough to show is being imposed on people here. And again, it stands in sharp contrast to what other countries have done, like China, like South Korea. And I picked both of them because one of them is a country governed by a communist party, and the other one is a government run by a completely opposed party. But both of them understand that in this time of crisis, we can't let the market decide. And if I could add another point, when we were in a war in World War II, and we had to use resources to fight a war, and there weren't therefore enough goods and services left for the general citizen public, we dispensed with the market because the government of the United States understood that if you only distributed scarce food, clothing, gasoline, coal, oil to people with money, the vast majority not having enough money, they would become less interested in supporting the war than they might otherwise be. So to pursue a war we got rid of the market and we distributed ration cards to the people. And by the way, we distributed them according to people's need, not according to the money they had. If a war, winning a war in World War II made us dispense with the market, how can you possibly not justify fighting a war against a deadly disease using the same mechanisms? Now, clearly, Mr. Trump doesn't know the history, but logic alone and morality alone would dictate nothing else.
Let's contrast Sanders with his main rival currently, and that's Joe Biden. On the same day that Sanders gave a speech, former Vice President Joe Biden did as well. He, similar to Sanders, talked about needing to make any and all testing free. People should be tested at no charge. And then he said how the CDC, private labs, universities, manufacturing should be working lockstep to get a vaccine mobilized. And he said no effort should be spared, none, no excuses should be made. Tests should be made available to all who need them, and the government should stop at nothing to make that happen. Yet he mentioned nothing about, of course, the fact that we have this patchy healthcare system and that there are 27.5 million Americans who are uninsured. But just a few days ago, Richard, on Monday, in an interview on MSNBC, host Lawrence O'Donnell asked Biden, if by some political miracle the House and the Senate passed a Medicare for All bill and it came to your desk as president, would you veto it? Biden did not hesitate. He said, yes, he would veto it. What do you say to that?
I think Mr. Biden is exactly what everybody in America knows he is. I don't think we disagree amongst ourselves that he's a tired, old representative of the tired old machine that governs the Democratic Party, the machine of Clinton, the machine of Obama, unfortunately also going way back. We only disagree on whether we can or cannot do better than that at this point. Some of us in the Democratic Party decide we can't do better, so we go with him, and we're so afraid of the socialist label that we really can't think our way clearly to that. And so we get a person who will support things he wouldn't have in the past because he has to face Mr. Sanders' opposition. So he says a few of the things we like to hear, even though I credit Bernie with that, not him. And then when the push comes to shove, when O'Donnell asks him that blunt question, well, then the old machine fellow comes up and does his thing again. He's gonna quibble with this or that detail when he knows that the fundamental question is combating this virus, and to do it with a mobilized government under a single payer system is a much better chance at coping than doing it in this ad hoc, partial, limited way. It's a pathetic display of a dysfunctional economic system that can't cope with a deregulator, a government that can't compensate for the failures of the private sector.
I'm trying to imagine him during his speech about the coronavirus saying the same things that he said a few days earlier during the MSNBC interview. How are we going to pay for it? How is it going to impact the other parts of our budget? How are we going to justify the middle class taxes would have to be raised? None of those excuses were explicitly laid out when he spoke about the coronavirus. And indeed, when he's talking to an entire population facing this very threatening disease, it would be crass to raise such concerns. But it wasn't crass just a few days ago.
Yes, and let me add, over the last 10 days, the stock market in the United States has suffered losses in the several trillions of dollars. That is more money, much more money, than it would have taken in the 2 months before that crash of the stock market to spend no matter how much to bring the test kits to this country, which are still unavailable. I have a friend who's a teacher in the New York school system. She's a nurse. She meets with sick children every day in her office. She asked for test kits. There are none. She asked for protective gear for herself to wear. There are none. Her school had none. The Board of Education of the City of New York had none. The State of New York had none. If we had taken a fraction of the money we've already lost on the stock market to deal with this crisis in an appropriate way, if only copying what other countries have done, it would have been cheaper. We would have avoided this kind of economic catastrophe. So the people who tell you, oh, we can't afford it, the reality is, and Bernie's made this point, we can't afford not to. Before, it was just a question of having people sick, having people get sicker because they can't afford early visits to a doctor so that by the time they go, the disease is severe. Those were already important considerations. But now this virus shows us if we don't have a proper health system, the cost is much greater than any estimate of what such a medical system, thereby showing the lie on the part of those who keep mumbling about the cost.
The issue of paid sick leave is also part of this conversation, is it not, Richard? It was interesting that Democrats who pushed this bill in the Senate just earlier this week, the bill was blocked by Senator Lamar Alexander. And what he wanted to know was, he said something to the effect of, if Washington, D.C. wants paid sick leave, Washington, D.C. should pay for it, i.e. taxpayers. So, you know, somehow Mr. Alexander, Senator Alexander, does not feel concerned about the fact that maybe this might be socialism, because of course taxpayer dollars to for the rich are always, it's always fine to have taxpayer dollars offer socialist you know, safety nets for the rich, for corporate America, because paid sick leave ought to be, of course, paid for by your employer. And the senator wants the government to subsidize it at this time. But they don't see that. They don't view that as socialism.
No, it's remarkable. You know, two things. One, the United States is one of the very few advanced industrial countries that does not, as a matter of law, mandate paid sick leaves on the grounds that no employer should be in a position of not paying a person who gets ill. This is an outrage against basic human decency to one another. When one of us is sick, the others step up so that when we get sick, other people step up and we behave like normal human beings. We don't have that in this country. That's why it's an issue now. Everybody we're telling, go get tested. What we're really saying to the millions who have no paid sick leave, go lose a day's pay to get yourself tested. And we know the power of incentives. You're creating an incentive not to get tested by putting the burden on the worker. Then when it comes to saying who should pay, then you get this amazing sudden interest in saving the employer by putting it on everybody else. I mean, this is outrageous. It's got nothing to do with socialism. We're learning that the whole anti-socialism was a fake from the beginning. In 1989, the Soviet Union got rid of its socialist system. It basically threw the Communist Party out of office. It declared itself to be a capitalist country. The United States is still an enemy of Russia. Russia is still an enemy of the United States. We have applied sanctions to them. We've applied more difficulties to them now than when they were a socialist country. And why? Because we have disputes over oil with them. We have disputes over foreign policy. The cover of anti-socialism was to make it a big crusade to win conservative people. It had nothing to do with that. And Mr. Lamar Alexander is just doing the hack work of the corporations that fund him by saying, okay, if I can't stop paid sick leave for everybody the way I used to, I now have to say, okay, we'll have it, but I don't want my employer friends to pay for it. No, we'll socialize the cost of this decency by making everybody pay. Mm-hmm. What a remarkable perversion of what leadership might otherwise be.
Trump has made it very clear right from the start that he cares about the financial sector, he cares about the stock market. And what he has proposed, is bailing out the travel industry, bailing out the fracking industry because oil and gas prices fell. Again, none of that is seen as socialism for the rich, right? He's made it so clear that he cares about the health of the economy, which he sees as directly linked to his reelection, than the health of American people.
Yes, but I think he's making a terrible mistake. This collapsing stock market is a much bigger threat, in my humble opinion, to his reelection than anything else, including the virus. Because the virus, and you're going to see this more and more, Sonali, the virus is being used as an excuse. You see, a company that made a bad investment that it can't make money will blame the virus. A project of a government agency that goes badly will be excused on the grounds of the virus. The virus will be presented as a kind of deus ex machina, a kind of alien force that came in on us and disrupted everything, rather than facing the fact that past viruses have been managed by our modern capitalist system, but something makes our modern capitalist system so fragile now, so dispersed into the private sectors competing for profits first above all else, that it can't handle the problem. That reality has to be put foregrounded. And I see it coming in the collapsing stock market, because at the end of the month of March, assuming that this situation doesn't get magically corrected, and I see no reason to expect it, by the end of March, as people get their monthly statements and realize that their 401k pension plans have tens of thousands, if not more, less in them, and that therefore their retirement is compromised, and everybody who has a portfolio of shares, which half the people have, even though they don't have very much, that will be much less, and on and on and on. And the ramifications of that, as people whose wealth has been shaken by the loss of trillions decide to spend less, particularly on automobiles or housing, damaging those fundamental markets, you're going to see an economic fallout that is going to blow away Mr. Trump, in the same way that the collapse in the last 4 months of 2008 blew away any chance for the Republicans to win that election and brought in Mr. Obama. So I do think that we're looking at a situation where Mr. Trump is at enormous risk. When he met last Wednesday with the executives of the airline companies, offering a bailout only to have them say, we don't need it because we have so much money in the bank from the tax cut you gave us in December of 2017. Wow. It is surrealistic. A playwright couldn't make up such a story in the middle of the coronavirus, a desperate president wanting to curry favor with another group of business men and women, only to have them tell him that they don't need it. It is outrageous. They're sitting on a pile of money which could have and should have, along with other corporations, been taxed to prepare for this war against a dangerous disease, but an incompetent government and an uncaring corporate leadership precluded that from happening.
I want to just bring up the fact that we're also sort of seeing the pitfalls of American exceptionalism. In the days before this virus reached U.S. shores, it was easy for commentators, just setting aside Trump and the Republicans, even so-called liberal commentators looking at China, critiquing and criticizing China's response, setting aside the rightful critiques of China's authoritarianism, but they were critiquing China's missteps and inaction and how too long went by before China took action. All of that time could have actually been spending looking at what we were going to be doing when the virus reached our shores. Now, all this language about America being the greatest nation on earth doesn't mean anything when it looks like we ourselves have had the worst reaction to this disease. The CDC has tested something like less than a dozen people on U.S. soil for coronavirus. It's shocking.
Absolutely. If America is exceptional, then in this coronavirus story, the exceptionalism is all negative. They waited too long. They tested too few. They've developed no mechanism for handling anything like the flood of people that are going now to be tested and are going to be shown to be carrying the virus and are going to need help of all kinds in hospitals that don't have the beds for them, that don't have the preparation for them. It's not profitable for the hospitals to be prepared in advance, so they didn't do it. It's not profitable. And I could go on and on. Yeah. The critique of the Chinese, which may or may not be true, I don't know. But what's clear to me is that the reporters who carry these stories, they didn't know either. What we do now know, and that's confirmed by the World Health Organization, is that the Chinese rapidly mobilized a vast army of resources, governmental, private, federal, local, and really locked down Wuhan, the area where it began, and several other parts of China, and have now been able to demonstrate statistically that they have at least stopped the spread, and they are now at the downside, they hope, of the process that they undertook. We have no such claim. We don't. And in fact, in the other countries where it has exploded, particularly in Italy and in Iran, the story is very frightening as to what happens if you wait, if you don't do it, if you think you're the exception that will not be hurt by this, if you don't take the preparatory steps. So yeah, this is an exposure also of the self-promoting notion that the United States is somehow in a dominant position. This constant reference to the great economy. I'm a professional economist. Look at what is happening now. It's not just the failure to cope with a virus. And again, let me remind everyone, virus is part of life. We have viruses all the time. Flu is part of a virus much of the time. We are not prepared to handle it, but we can't blame virus. We've known about that for decades. Each one is unique. But that's what we knew as well, and we could have and should have been prepared. But look at the economy. We can't handle the downturn that's happening now. We are the most indebted economy in our history. Every time a company can't make a profit, it's not just the company and its workers that are affected. It's all the banks and others from whom they've borrowed money that are going to be affected when those loans can't be paid back. That's why you see the contagion on Wall Street as investors begin to recognize that this is going to undercut an economy which turns out to not have been great at all, but to have been monumentally fragile, puffed up on a level of credit and money flowing in from the Federal Reserve that is now jeopardized in every direction by a virus that you didn't prepare for, that is undercutting. 70% of our economy is consumer spending, but the consumers aren't going to where any other consumer is, not to the mall, not to the restaurant, not to the college. Right. These are situations that are literally a threat to our economic survival. That's an economy that wasn't great, because a great economy would have been able to handle this much better.
Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight. Always appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you, Sonali. It's a pleasure to be here.
My guest has been Richard Wolff, visiting professor at the New School University in New York, professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst. He's written a number of books, including Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism, Imagine Living in a Socialist USA, and others. We've been discussing the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. economy, and how Trump stands in stark contrast to candidates like to a candidate like Bernie Sanders. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.